in all three stages of material change. And this is a very scientific and crucial discussion because science is basically oriented towards finding out the origin. Not only science, but philosophy. Of all sciences, philosophy is the beginning, the supreme. To understand the origin gives us a very important information about then what the purpose is and what our aim should be, what our duty is, if there isn't a duty or not. Because whoever or whatever would originate or be the origin or the source would then have some determining factor on what should take place. Just like, for example, if a man wishes to have a building built, he provides the money to buy the materials, hires an architect, has the contractor, then it goes without saying that the building would be under his direction. It would be utilized the way he wishes. So if the origin is simply chance or nothingness, then naturally philosophers would philosophize that everything is happening by chance and there's no particular design, there's no reason, there's no goals for the living beings. Their life may also come by chance. And they do. Because they have no clear idea what the source of the creation is, then they similarly speculate that life must also be a product of chance or accident. And then there's also that same philosophy then permeates all aspects of living. We would say also that morality should also be conducted by chance. In other words, whatever one feels, or if one happens to accidentally. There's no rules, no guidelines. Everything is happening by chance, accident. That is one theory. And that is a popular theory now, because then it allows everyone to behave in a haphazard way, just according to whimsy. And no one has to deal with the idea that there should be someone greater than everyone else. But here, Lord Krishna himself is declaring that I existed before the creation. Basically what he's saying is, I am the source of everything. I have created everything. And not only do I create it, but I maintain it. And after I've maintained it for some time, I annihilate it back into myself and still I exist. And I am Upro Vyakta. This is Shankaracharya has even agreed that before and after the creation, there is no I. He's transcendental. This also clearly stipulates that Shiva and Brahma are not equal to Vishnu, because before they even existed, Vishnu was present. There was no Shiva, there was no Brahma, there was no Durga. Sometimes we go to different functions, Hindu functions, and we see that they have no distinction between worshipping Durga or Shiva or Brahma, anyone. But this is not correct. This is disrespectful, and it is called Vaishnava. It means actually one is an atheist. Because if one says, I believe in God, of course, everyone's God. That means he doesn't believe in God. Because God is not everyone. God is one. So as soon as I say I believe in God, many gods, and I've contradicted myself, it's like I say, I believe in law. But everyone can make up their own law. Then what I'm really saying is I don't believe in the government law. It's just a more polite way of saying it. You know, an atheist will come out boldly and say, I don't believe that there's God. But a Bhashyambi will say, of course there's God. Don't you see, there's so many of them. Well, this is incorrect, and it is offensive. It is considered to be one of the 10 offenses in chanting the holy name. In other words, one who has this misconception will not be able to progress properly in his devotional activities. Even if he chants the holy name of the Lord, it will not be properly received. The Lord, Krishna, will not appreciate the behavior of such a person. So that mentality must be changed, and that can be changed by hearing from the bona fide spiritual master, who can put everything in its proper perspective. Otherwise, it is difficult, as it's stated in Mahabharata, there are so many different arguments. Simply, tarko pratishta shrutayo vibhinna. Tarka means arguing, wrangling. So, one person may argue from one point of view and come up with a very good logical argument. And someone else may defeat that argument. And this can go on. There is an example of tall fruit logic. So the story goes that there was a tall tree, means palm tree, and there was a fruit. And one crow was sitting up in the tree, and he flew away. So two philosophers were sitting down below, and of course the fruit dropped. And one of them said, did you notice how when the crow flew off, the weight from the branch caused the fruit to fall? And the other philosopher said, no, it wasn't like that at all. Actually, what happened was the fruit falling frightened the crow, and then he flew away. And those said, no, I must disagree with you emphatically. I'm positive that it was the crow's flying away that caused the fruit to fall. The other said, no, it was the fruit's falling that frightened me. So they went on and on like this, debating, ad infinitum. Similarly, the philosophers like to debate where we came from, what is our, whether we came from the Vaikuntha Lokas, or whether we came from the Brahma Jyoti, or different kinds of philosophical questions. However, this kind of philosophical debate can go on with no conclusion. Arguments, philosophers will always be there. There'll always be some difference. So the real religious principle, dharmasya tattvam vihitam guhayam, is situated in the heart of the pure devotee. Not the gyanis. Doesn't say gyanis. Mahajano yena gatasa bhakta. So who is the mahajana that should be followed? It is the bhakta. Bhaktyamana vijanati yavanyas chasvatatata. Krishna says clearly in Bhagavad Gita that only by bhakti can I be understood. That means the gyanis do not have any access to understand the Lord. His position is beyond them. They will be covered by his illusory energy. So, the impersonalist adduces no activity in the Supreme. But in this discussion between Brahma and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Lord is said to have activities also, as he has his form and quality. The activities of Brahma And the other demigods during the maintenance of the creation are to be understood as the activities of the Lord. The king or the executive head of a state may not be seen in the government offices, for he may be engaged in royal comforts. Yet it should be understood that everything is being done under his direction, and everything is at his command. The personality of Godhead is never formless. In the material world, he may not be visible in his personal form to the less intelligent class of men, and therefore, he may sometimes be called formless. But actually, he is always in his eternal form in his Vaikuntha planets, as well as in other planets of the universe as different incarnations. The example of the sun is very appropriate in this connection. The sun in the night may not be visible to the eyes of men in the darkness, but the sun is visible wherever it has risen. That the sun is not visible to the eyes of the inhabitants of a particular part of the earth does not mean that the sun has no form. So everyone clear on this point? That God exists, he has his own abode beyond our vision. Therefore some people call God formless because they can't see him. But that doesn't mean that he's formless, it just means that they don't have the eyes to see him. He reveals himself, even though he's situated in Goloka Vrindavan, Goloka Eva Nivisati Kilatva Bhuta. Even though he's there, he expands and he reveals himself to his pure devotees, but not to the foolish. Aham prakasya sarvasya yogamaya samavati. Mudho yam namijanati lokamama javade. He never reveals himself to the fools. So therefore they call him formless, nirakar, that he has no form. But he has form, but you have to be qualified to see. Continuing in the purport. In the Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad 1.4.1, there is the hymn, Atmanavedam Agraasi Purusha Vidha. This mantra indicates the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna even before the appearance of the Purusha incarnation. In the Bhagavad Gita 15.18, it is said that Lord Krishna is Purushottama because he is the Supreme Purusha, transcendental even to the Purusha Akshara. And the Purusha Kshara, the Akshara Purusha, or the Mahavishnu, throws his glance over Prakriti, or material nature. But the Purushottama existed even before that. The Brihan Aranyaka Upanishad therefore confirms the statement of the Bhagavad Gita that Lord Krishna is the Supreme Person, Purushottama. This is important to know who the Supreme Person is. Because if we're worshipping someone who is not the Supreme Person and we're thinking he is the Supreme Person, then the real Supreme Person will be disappointed with us, will not be pleased with us. Isn't it? That's a mistaken identity. Just like, let's say, you create amongst yourself that one of your friends is the police chief. And you start honoring him as the police chief, and whatever instructions he gives, you carry them out, and you all, maybe you make believe you're all policemen, and he's the police chief. And so you start going around arresting people, and so many things. So what will happen? The real police chief will find out about it. And when the real police chief finds out that you're the imitator, or there's the imitator police chief, he will be taken, handcuffed and put in prison. And all the policemen who followed him will also be similarly punished. So in the same way, if we worship anyone or respect someone as God who isn't God, then it's not only a mistake, but it's offensive and it's criminal. So we have to be very careful to worship the real God. Purushottama. Continuing in the purport. In some of the Vedas, it is also said that in the beginning, only the impersonal Brahman existed. However, according to this verse, the impersonal Brahman, which is the glowing effulgence of the body of the Supreme Lord, may be called the immediate cause, but the cause of all causes, or the remote cause, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord's impersonal feature is existent in the material world because my material senses are material eyes. The Lord cannot be seen or perceived. One has to spiritualize the senses before one can expect to see or perceive the Supreme Lord. But He is always engaged in His personal capacity, and He is eternally visible to the inhabitants of Vaikuntha Loka, eye to eye. Therefore, He is materially impersonal. Just as the executive head of the state may be impersonal to the government offices, or may be impersonal in the government offices, although He is not impersonal in the government house. Very important point. That God is impersonal materially. So when someone says, I'm an impersonalist, I believe that God has no form. Right, we agree. He has no material form. He cannot be perceived with material senses. Ataksya Krishna Namadi na Bhavet Grayam Indriyat Seva Mukhihi Jiva Goswami Mevas Purata. But He's not impersonal spiritually. Spiritually, He's completely personal, completely full of relationships, loving affairs, and His own abode is better than any abode here. So why don't you wake up and go back to that abode? Why do you stay here simply glorifying the impersonal feature of the Absolute Truth? What is this nonsense? Why don't you go back and find the real person there? And live with Him. It's a much better place. Ah, you know why? You don't want to wake up because you're dreaming about being God yourself. That's your nonsense. Continuing. Similarly, the Lord is not impersonal in His abode, which is always nirasta kuvakam, as stated in the very beginning of the Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, both the impersonal and personal features of the Lord are acceptable, as mentioned in the revealed scriptures. This personality of Godhead is very emphatically explained in the Bhagavad Gita in connection with the verse Brahmano hi pratishtaham, Bhagavad Gita 14:27. What does that mean? Brahmano hi pratishtaham. Krishna says He's the basis of the impersonal Brahman. So there's no, it's not unclear, it's completely clear if you accept Bhagavad Gita. Continuing, therefore, in all ways, the confidential part of spiritual knowledge is realization of the personality of Godhead and not His impersonal Brahman feature. The impersonalists say that the Tattvamasi is the most important aphorism of the Vedas, which is the impersonal aspect, or at least that's how they interpret it. But actually, the Omkar is more important because Omkar stresses the personality of Godhead. Continuing in the purport. The example of the sky within the pot and the sky outside the pot may be helpful to the student for his realization of the all-pervading quality of the cosmic consciousness of the Absolute Truth. But that does not mean that the individual part and parcel of the Lord becomes the Supreme by a false claim. It means only that the conditioned soul is a victim of the illusory energy in her last snare. To claim to be one with the cosmic consciousness of the Lord is also the last trap set by the illusory energy or Daivi Maya. Even in the impersonal existence of the Lord, as it is in the material creation, one should aspire for personal realization of the Lord, and that is the meaning of paschadaham yade tachcha yoga shishyeta sosmiham. Ramaji also accepted the same truth when he was instructing Narada. He said, so yam te vihitastata bhagavan vishvabhavana 2750 Bhagavatam. So a comment, that example of the air outside the pot and the air inside the pot, the sky. This is the impersonalists like to use this example because they say, when you break the pot, then the airs merge. So similarly, when we break the illusion of, when we give up the body, break the illusion of this material world, then we also merge and become one with the Supreme. The problem with that analogy is that a good analogy is one that has the most number of similar points between the things being compared. So a pot has no consciousness. It is not alive. So therefore it is not a very apt analogy to a living entity that is eternally conscious and is a person. So that, therefore that analogy is not very appropriate. Of course we can give any analogy to prove a point, and that's what the philosophers and the Mayavadis do. Continuing in the purport. There is no other cause of all causes than the Supreme Personality of God in Pali. Therefore this verse, Aham, Eva, never indicates anything other than the Supreme Lord, and one should therefore follow the path of the Brahma Sampradaya, or the path from Brahmaji to Narada to Vyasadeva, etc., and make it a point in life to realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead Hari, or Lord Krishna. This very confidential instruction to the pure devotees of the Lord was also given to Arjuna and to Brahma in the beginning of the creation. The demigods like Brahma, Vishnu, Maheshwar, Indra, Chandra, and Varuna are undoubtedly different forms of the Lord for execution of different functions. The different elemental ingredients of material creation, as well as the multifarious energies, also may be of the same Supreme Personality of Godhead, but the root of all of them is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. One should be attached to the root of everything rather than bewildered by the branches and the leaves. That is the instruction given in this verse. Are there any questions? Well, even from a material point of view, even from a scientific point of view, the molecules that make up the air inside the pot do not change and become part of the others. They keep their individuality. So if you want to get atomic, if you want to get precise, that analogy also breaks down. Because all those molecules and atoms that make up the air inside, when you break it out, they go around. You may not be able to see them with your naked eye, so you say it merges. Just like they also give the example of a green bird, when it flies into a green tree, it merges. Now, does it really merge? No, it merges because your eye is not able to discriminate the bird from the tree because of your imperfect senses. But one who's a little bit more astute goes and sees, oh, there's the bird, he's inside the tree, look, goes in the closer. So similarly, the atoms are there. They give so many examples. They say the river flowing down into the ocean merges, but it doesn't actually merge. It merges in one sense. And we also agree that in one sense, a living entity, he leaves the material world and goes back. He merges into the spiritual world, but it doesn't mean he has no individuality. It doesn't mean that he ceases to exist as an individual person. Just like also in the river or in the ocean, there are aquatics. When you say the ocean, you can say the ocean is one. When you look at the ocean, but is that all there is, just oneness? Is it all homogeneous? Who thinks it is? Who thinks the ocean is completely one homogeneous? Raise your hand. You? Over here? Do you think? No. Because inside the ocean there's so many aquatics and plants and stones. So many things are there. So they say it's all one. But they don't know that within that one there's all kinds of varieties. That is due to their lack of proper vision. Similarly, the spiritual world. Someone may go there. That doesn't mean that he has no activities and that there's no variety. It's like people look at the sun. They say, oh, it's just one big homogeneous ball of fire. Isn't that what we conclude? How do we know? We're just speculating. We say, well, no one can go there. No one can live there. It's too hot. How do we know? Maybe there are some bodies that can adjust to that kind of life. And we actually find that out from the babies. Yes. But then he also explained, but not only are the demigods forms, you can consider them as God in a sense, but also the elements are also coming from. So that's also God, and the living entities are also God. But there is the worshipable aspect of God, and that is Krishna. And the other aspects are meant to be worshipping Krishna. Demigods also have to worship Krishna. They can't say, I'm God. I don't have to. Well, sometimes they do. Sometimes Indra becomes a little bit carried away with his position. Once, when Krishna went to Indraloka, he took his wife Satyabhama, because previously Narad Muni had made a gift to Rukmini, Krishna's first queen, of a Parijata flower. So Satyabhama, she was thinking, she was a co-wife. Krishna had many co-wives, 16,108. You can imagine. A little difficult sometimes to satisfy them, but not for Krishna. So Satyabhama said, dear husband, my beloved Rukmini got a Parijata flower. Do you think I could also get a Parijata flower? He said, why one Parijata flower? I'm prepared to get you a whole Parijata tree. Come with me. We shall go to the heavenly planets. So she went with him. They went up there. And while Krishna was going, he took the earrings that had been stolen by Bhomasura from Aditi, the mother of Indra, the mother of the demigods. So he wanted to return them to Indra. It was a very nice gesture. He took these very valuable earrings and he came to Indra and said, here are the inner earrings. I've recovered them after killing Bhomasura. And Indra was very pleased. Oh, thank you so much. And then Krishna said, and also I'm taking one Parijata tree for my beloved wife, down to Dwarka. Excuse me. Parijata trees don't leave the perimeter of the heavenly planets. And Krishna said, no, I'm taking them. And Indra said, no, you're not. So there was a fight. Indra actually fought against Krishna. And of course, Krishna defeated him very easily. And then Krishna made the statement that everyone should understand that nobody can defeat me. No one should fight against me. So, sometimes we may forget and think that we're God, even though, because we're very powerful, but actually we're meant to be servants of Krishna. No question.
This is related to the verse where Krishna reveals himself to Brahma. This is what I want to know. He says, that which you see now is also I, isn't it? Is that what this personal form, right?
Yes.
It's not like, it's not that.
No, he's personally speaking to Brahma, so therefore. But you could also take it the other way too, because whatever it is there is also a manifestation of himself, so either way.
So, when Brahma first started his tapas, he didn't really see Krishna, he just was in touch with Krishna through sound vibration, and the presence from tapas. And then later on, Krishna revealed himself personally.
What? Oh, when Krishna is pleased by the service of his devotees, then he reveals himself. Not that he wasn't pleased with the demigods, but perhaps not pleased enough. In other words, their service is very nice, but it's not completely pure, not free from material desires. They're also, they come to the Lord when things get difficult. When there's problems, there's demons, when there's disturbances. But sometimes they also forget. So therefore, their devotion is called sakama. It is not nishkama, like Narada Muni and other pure devotees. They're always seeing the Lord. Yam shama sundaram achintu guna swarupam. So for one who has no material desires, Prayanjana Chirita Bhakti Gulochanina, one whose eyes are anointed with the salve of love of Krishna, pure love, then Krishna reveals himself in his form of Shama Sundara always, like Prahlad Maharaj. Well, demigods may be considered not on that level. Therefore, it's not so easy for them to see the Lord. That's fine. Would you like to elaborate on that? Krishna's? We're seeing Krishna, it's like in the paintings we see. We see Prahlad falling from the cliffs, we see Krishna catching him. So Prahlad knew that this Krishna and the Shrimadeva were the same personality. He wasn't confused. That was an extraordinary form that Krishna revealed by coming out of the Shrimadeva. For Prahlad, there was no difference. The harm is, as we mentioned, that he's not the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore it is an offense to the real Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the Vedas, the 10 offenses are given. And one of the offenses is to consider Lord Brahma or Lord Shiva to be equal to the name of Lord Vishnu. Therefore, that is an offense, because he's not. It doesn't mean that because we don't say that he's God, that we disrespect him. No. We certainly respect him as the greatest of the Vaishnavas, and as Lord Brahma states in Brahma Samhita, that he's, in a sense, extraordinarily empowered. The Prabhupada even said he's more or less God. So more or less, notice his position is so unique, but still, he should not be considered an equal to him. Then you have to worship Vishnu. If you want to get liberation, if you want to get, you know, the highest perfection. But if you want to stay in the material world, then you worship the demigod, then you get the results.
Thank you very much. Grandparashima Bhagavatam Ki Jai.